Hi, this is Deb Perlman of the Smitten Kitchen, and you're listening to Food Fridays on the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 FM, AM 820, and WNYC.org.
You can tell Halloween is getting close by all the pumpkins piling up in farmers markets and grocery stores. But what do you do with a pumpkin aside from, of course, carve a jack-o'-lantern or make pumpkin pie? What about all those other intriguing-looking winter squashes in the markets? Well, we've invited the wonderful Melissa Clark back to our show to share tips and recipes about all things squash. She's a James Beard Award winner whose column A Good Appetite appears in the Wednesday dining section of the New York Times and at nytimes.com. Her latest book is Cook This Now for Hyperion, and I'm always happy to see you.
Always happy to be here.
And if you are one of our listeners, would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 212-433-9692, write us on our show page or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. But did you like making jack-o'-lanterns when you were a kid?
When I was a kid, not so much. I always found it really hard. We used the really big pumpkins as opposed to the smaller ones, which I think have flesh that's a little bit easier to cut into. And I just remember struggling with that knife, trying to get the straight, perfect triangles and not being able to. And I always found it very frustrating. And our jack-o'-lanterns were never – we never drew them first. We kind of did it freehand. I think that was probably a mistake. But, you know, today I'm going to make my first jack-o'-lantern with my five-year-old. And I have a big plan. I have a very sharp little paring knife that I will handle. We're going to draw everything first. And I have high hopes for something beautiful.
Well, the big ones are great for the jack-o'-lanterns, but yes, you really don't want to use them for the pie, do you?
That is a big mistake that a lot of people made. I've done that myself. The big pumpkins are only for jack-o'-lanterns. They just don't taste good. The bigger you let it get, the stringier it is. And also, those are not the right variety for pie or even for anything. The only thing that I really like about those, the seeds. Now, when you take, I know a lot of people just scoop out the seeds and throw them away, but those pumpkin seeds are amazing, and they are so easy to do. Spread them out. You don't even have to degoop them. You just take.
You know, I always degoop them.
You don't have to degoop them.
Paper towels.
No, you don't have to. You can just I remember I used to degoop them all the time, and then someone wrote in and told me that they didn't, and that what happens is all that gooey stuff, all the membranes, membranes that attach the seeds. If you just spread it out on your cookie sheet, it will kind of solidify into the sheet. It'll just almost fade away. It'll evaporate. Basically, most of the moisture evaporates. And then you have the toasted seeds, and you just lift those off the top. And they're fabulous. And I find it much easier. I just sort of scoop them right onto a cookie sheet, toss it with a little oil, a little bit of salt. And then I like to do them in a low oven, about 325, until they're just pale golden brown around the edges. And then they're crisp, and they're dry all the way through because you're using a low oven. Fabulous.
Have you always liked winter squashes, or is this something that you came to when you were to terms with when you were an adult?
No, winter squash.
The word squash to a kid, and almost automatically the kid's going to make a face.
You know, squash is one of those words like squish. Uh-huh. You know, it doesn't sound like it's going to be something yummy. But plus, you think of zucchini or a summer squash, which I think those are more of an acquired taste. But winter squash, with its dense orange flesh or yellow flesh, it's sweet. It's soft. I think everybody likes them. I know most kids most kids like them, I think. I mean, what about you? Are you a winter squash fan?
I like them, but I think that if somebody had told me that a pumpkin was a winter squash when I was a kid, I might not have liked it as much.
You know, that's a good point. You could really call all your winter squashes pumpkins. I think that it's stretching it a little bit, but if it's going to make your small child eat, then I think it's a worthy cause.
Do they have similar tastes?
Yes. Although it's funny, they all have this sort of similar overarching flavor. They tend to be, you know, they're a little bit sweet. They've got that distinctive squash taste, but each variety is very different from one another. And I did a taste test a year ago for the Times. I was researching the best pumpkin variety for pumpkin pie. And what do you think the answer was?
Some other kind of pumpkin. Some other kind of squash.
Exactly. Butternut squash is, I think, the best pumpkin pie. Makes the best pumpkin pie.
And that makes it easier to make the pie because butternut squash doesn't have that really thick skin.
Exactly.
You can use a vegetable peeler.
A nice, sharp vegetable peeler. You just slide that skin right off, and then I find that just makes it so much easier than having to scoop it out. Although, you know, if you use an acorn squash, acorn is very good as well. And you can just have that roast it, and then scoop it out. And that works well, too.
And you've given us a couple of recipes that are posted on our show page at WNYC.org. One of them you call an un-pumpkin pie.
Exactly. You know, I used to be very careful about my pumpkin pies. Even when I was using different kinds of squashes, I would call them pumpkin pies just because I was afraid that if I called it a butternut squash pie or a kabocha pie, people wouldn't want to eat it. But now,
kabocha is also good?
Yeah, kabocha has a really earthy flavor, so it tastes – it's a distinct flavor. It's different. I like it a lot. Some people take objection to it. I think kabocha works as long as you – well, I mean, kabocha works as long as you're expecting that flavor. I wouldn't try to tell people it was a pumpkin pie if I used kabocha. I would fess up. I'd be honest. I think that butternut squash, though, you could easily lie. No problem. People will not know that it's what you're using. They'll think, oh, pumpkin. And in fact, a lot of canned pumpkin, especially really the organic ones that tend to be, you know, really high quality, they often use butternut squash instead of pumpkin. If you read the ingredient label, you'll see that.
And some people swear by the canned pumpkin. It seems to me that doing it the old-fashioned way, at least in my imagination, makes for better pie.
It does make for better pie. And I have done the side by side. I think that it's fresher. I think it's sweeter. I think it's brighter in flavor. You know, when you can something, you dull down the flavor. However, there are huge differences among the different brands. Some brands have almost like a cooked flavor, a little bit bland, not very sweet. But some cans are better than others. So if you can maybe try around, if you really want to use canned pumpkin, I would say if it's more expensive, it's, you know, if it's $2 instead of $1, I would go for that. I think it'll probably be a slightly better quality.
Well, there's also another canned ingredient that many people use, evaporated milk.
You know?
And you prefer using heavy cream.
That it's funny that persists, because evaporated milk is a wartime substitute for heavy cream. There's no war going on. There's no reason for
us
to be.
Well, actually,
there are, but not affecting our food supply right now. We are very lucky in that, actually. So we can get heavy cream, and we should use or half and half if you want to cut down on the fat, or even whole milk. But there's using the evaporated stuff adds what I think is this cooked tinned flavor that I find very pronounced. However, a lot of people are accustomed to that flavor. You know, they're used to pumpkin pie made with, you know, canned pumpkin and canned milk. And if you love that,
And a store-bought crust.
And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you love, then that's what you should do. However, if you're thinking, maybe I want to try something new, I would say try fresh pumpkin. Try fresh dairy, be it cream, milk, or half and half. And just try making your own crust. Even a graham cracker crust, a homemade graham cracker crust, will be more crisp and butterier than the stuff that you buy in the store.
Now, do you prefer to mash them like mashed potatoes, or do you put them in a food processor?
I like it very smooth, so I will food process it. You could, if you want a little bit of texture, you could just mash it like mashed potatoes. But I find with squash, if you roast it really well, they really do. You don't need to do much. I mean, I put it in the food processor for 10 seconds and it falls apart and it just becomes this orange, velvety, lovely stuff, which you only need about a cup and a half for a pie, I think, maybe 2 cups for pie, I forget exactly, but you don't need much. And if you're using a butternut squash, you'll get much more. And sometimes I'll just eat that puree with a little bit of yogurt and some cinnamon, and it's so good, and it's good for you and makes you feel autumnal and warm and cozy.
Well, you also put ginger in it, fresh ginger,
uh-huh.
And brandy. Now, are you when you're having it with the yogurt, is that with the ginger and
no.
the brandy as well?
Oh, I mean, actually, that would be great. That would I should do that. I should do all the seasonings except the eggs. You know, do the sugar, and that would be like a little pumpkin pie cup.
You also gave us a crust recipe, and one of my staff wonders if you've ever used oil for a crust instead of butter or. Some people use lard.
I love lard. Lard is great. I find it very flaky. It does have – I do find that it has a flavor, especially if you're using good lard. You're not using lard that's been deodorized and highly processed.
Have you ever made your own?
Yeah, I have made my own, and that is – that's it. That takes a while. That takes a long time, but it has a great flavor. I mean, it kind of tastes like – there's like this faint – barnyardy thing, which I like, but you have to be prepared for it. So I think that if you are serving it to people who maybe aren't going to be so delighted with that flavor, you might want to use butter. Another thing that's really great, though, schmaltz, chicken fat. Believe it or not. I mean, again, you're going to get a little bit of that flavor, but it gives a terrific flakiness. And And I kind of like it. It has a warm flavor. But, you know, you have to be mentally prepared.
My guest is Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer who has a weekly column in the New York Times. And her latest cookbook is Cook This Now. We're talking about pumpkins and other winter squashes. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And Judy from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. My sister Zippy in Manhattan and I are both really big fans of yours. And I wanted to say that I have butternuts and delicatas all over my kitchen, and Amy Goldman's book, Complete Squash. But here's my question for you. I recently took
Goodman's squash book takes a political view of squash. That's a radio joke. Okay, go ahead.
So one of the new books I took out of the library has a recipe for a fermented butternut squash.
Really?
Well, you've just done fermented butter, haven't you?
I did just do ferment. How do you ferment a butternut squash? Have you tried it yet?
So I'm gathering the ingredients to make it, which includes spice mix of allspice, cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, Granny Smith apples, the butternut squash, some onions. It's a brine, basically, cutting up the squash and the apples and filling the jar for a period of a couple of days. And I'm wondering if you've ever made or heard of something like this.
I mean, it sounds like you're almost making a pickle.
Right.
That sounds fabulous. I have never heard of that. I have never tried that. And I might have to go home and play with it because I just love that idea. So do you add any kind of acidic ingredient, or does it just ferments? It's sort of like a malolactic fermentation, like a sauerkraut.
That's right. There's no acidic ingredient in there.
So
and there's salt, of course.
Right, salt, exactly. That is great. Thank you for telling me about that. I really will. I'm going to play with that, and maybe I'll do some. Was that from Amy Goldman's book? Was that from the squash book, or that was
from Dee Dee Emmons' new book called Wild Flavors?
Wild Flavors. I'm going to find that. Thank you for calling.
Okay,
that's great.
Thank you. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now, apples went into that.
Yeah, that's
recipe,
what I was thinking.
And apples often are paired with squash.
Yes, apples and squash are a great combination. Apples are so juicy, and squash tends to be on the dry side. It doesn't have as much moisture. So when you combine the two, you really get this kind of lovely, juicy, sweet, and also tart. Apples have a tartness, and squash does not have a tartness. So I think that when you pair squash with something tart, which is also why I use fresh ginger in my pumpkin pie, I want just a little something with an edge to offset that sweet flavor of the squash.
A listener on Twitter asked what wine goes well with pumpkin, and I was thinking, would apple cider be a better idea?
Oh, gosh, that'd be a dry, sparkling cider would be fabulous with squash. That's a great idea. Actually, I think any sparkling wine would go really nicely with winter squash. But, you know, it's a friendly, forgiving flavor. I don't think it's that hard to pair with. I would probably say whatever your favorite wine.
Preferably white in this case.
Preferably white, although, you know, maybe a low alcohol, sort of high acid red, you know, like a nice Cru Beaujolais would be fabulous.
We'll take a little break and we'll come back with more of your calls and this conversation about pumpkins and related squash with Melissa Clark, who has a weekly column every Wednesday in the New York Times called A Good Appetite. Also on nytimes.com. Her latest book is Cook This Now for Hyperion. We'll talk about some of the other recipes that you have suggested for us and that we posted on our show page at WNYC.org. But first, this. Later on in the show, we'll go behind the scenes of the Food Network and find out how the channel went from struggling startup to cultural staple over the last 20 years. Plus, with another salmonella outbreak in the headlines, this week's Please Explain is about food poisoning. And here's a reminder that we're pickling as part of Food Fridays. If you've never pickled before, we've got some great recipes and a video to get you started. And if you are already a seasoned pro, show us what you got. And then post a picture of your pickles on Instagram and tag it Lopate Pickles. And I'll be picking my favorite pickles later this month. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast.
WNYC receives support from Empire State Development's Division of Tourism, whose official site, iloveny.com, has details on statewide food and beverage trails, culinary classes and demonstrations, and more. Information at iloveny.com. Kendall on Hudson, a continuing care retirement community located in historic Sleepy Hollow, 35 minutes north of New York City. Personal tours can be scheduled. More info on Kendall on Hudson at 1-866-KENDALNY. BAM, presenting Anne Teresa Dukirzmecker's En Attendant and Cesena, two works grounded in polyphonic medieval music and featuring vocal ensemble Grand Delavoye, October 19th and 20th. Tickets and video previews at BAM.org.
Technology has changed virtually every aspect of our lives, but when it comes to meeting new people, there's still nothing like live and in person. I'm Anusha Marodi, host of New Tech City. Join me this Thursday for a beer and bingo mixer for New Yorkers in their 20s and 30s, with snacks and two complimentary drinks. Find all our events and purchase tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.
We are back with Melissa Clark. Her latest book is Cook This Now from Hyperion, the 22nd, I think we determined, cookbook.
The 30, you mean 30?
Oh, 30 cookbooks.
You lost about 10 there.
And, of course, there's a weekly column in the New York Times food section called A Good Appetite. We are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And let's go to Joe from Brooklyn. Hi, Joe. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, well, barely.
Oh, let me fix it. I was actually calling because my wife is from Uzbekistan, and she had never heard of pumpkin being served as a dessert squash at all in pies or in puddings. To her, it was always used as just an ordinary squash that we served with salt and pepper and garlic and buttery and that sort of way. So I think we kind of miss out on something by only using pumpkins as squash, as a dessert squash.
Well, we could also use pumpkins and other squash in soups, can't we? And that's another way, not just a dessert ingredient.
You know, but I think what Joe is pointing out, which is something very true of our culture, is that I'd say 90% of the time we pair pumpkin or winter squash with another sweet flavor. We add maple syrup. We add honey. If we make a soup, we might add, apples or something to play up the sweetness of it. And I think that there's a case to be made to make it completely savory. We don't do that enough here, and that is another great way to have it. I'm trying to think of ways that I might want to try a squash. Like, for example, in a stir fry. I've never made a stir fry of winter squash. Why not? I'll bet those savory flavors, soy sauce and sesame oil and garlic and ginger would be wonderful with that slight sweetness of the squash. So, Joe, you've got me thinking. Thank you for your call.
Well, you do have a recipe that you provided for us called honey roasted delicata squash salad with arugula and almonds, but that's sweetened by the honey?
By the honey, exactly. So I'm using the honey to play up the natural sweetness of the squash. And another thing for that recipe is that it's roasted. And if you add a little bit of honey or maple syrup when you're roasting a squash, you get sort of this sticky caramelized quality, which I love, but it is sweet. I mean, it's playing the sweet side.
Well, in that salad, you have a vinaigrette that uses lemon juice
right. Instead
of vinegar, because that will cut through the sweetness.
Cut through that. That'll balance it out for the salad. And then arugula, of course, is very peppery, a little bit bitter, which is nice with the sweetness of the squash. I've also done that same salad with carrot, which is also very good.
Now, another listener has gotten involved in this, shared this pumpkin idea on Twitter. Sweet pumpkin dishes, she writes, are very unusual to me. We have kabocha pumpkins cooked to mush in oil with garlic, salt, and hot pepper.
That sounds great. That just sounds absolutely delicious. I've never done it. I want to do it. I have a kabocha at home. I might actually make that for dinner because that just sounds, that's exactly what we're talking about, just playing up this different side. And kabocha particularly is so earthy that I think it would work even better with savory flavors than, say, a butternut, which might be a little too sweet, but it might not.
Richard in Brooklyn writes, you haven't mentioned buttercup, which I love, actually prefer to butternut.
Buttercup is a great squash. It's a little bit hard to find. Not many people can get it. So I didn't use it. I did a test of all these different winter squashes for pumpkin pies. I roasted them all, pureed them all. But buttercup, I just couldn't find it. I know that they do sell it at the farmer's market sometimes. Also, dumpling squash, hard to find. Again, sweet and fabulous.
And what about Hubbard squashes, which have that pale blue-green color?
Oh, I love those. Those are great looking. They don't taste that good, though. They're really hard. To cut that leathery skin is quite something. I mean, it's really, they're quite well defended against invaders, such as myself, with a big knife. And then when you do get through, the flesh is particularly granular, which I don't like so much.
Rocco from Brooklyn suggests using a sheetrock saw or a keyhole saw to carve pumpkins.
That's smart.
He says that using a knife can be dangerous.
He's absolutely right. I remember there was this one year when I was a kid. I mean, I didn't get cut badly, but, you know, there was a little bit of a... One of my fingers was temporarily bloody, and I think using one of those, or a little jigsaw, something like that, is a great idea.
Now, pumpkins, all of these squash, are indigenous of the Americas.
Yes.
But they're grown all over the world. Do they change when they go to other parts of the world?
You'd assume so. You'd assume that so much of it is terroir. It's the place that they're grown. I mean, I do notice that when you go to Italy, which is one of the few European countries. I mean, in France, they don't use a lot of winter squash. In Spain, I don't, at least not that I can think of. Maybe they do, but I'm not thinking of it. But in Italy, yes, there's a lot of winter squash that's used. You know, it's used in ravioli. It's used in all kinds of dishes. And I find their winter squashes to be very different in flavor. They are also on the more savory side, still a little sweet. They look different, you know, and they're probably different varieties that have also, you know, evolved and changed as they've been cultivated.
Let's take some more calls. Our next caller is John from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. How are you? A couple of years ago, I stumbled on using butternut squash as a thickener for my gravy on Thanksgiving. And, we roasted butternut to be the side dish, and I didn't have any flour readily available. And I used it, and it was the best gravy I've ever made in my life. There was absolutely no lumps, and it must be the starch in the squash just thickened it perfectly.
That is the best thing I've ever heard. That's brilliant.
Best thing you've ever heard.
Today, the best thing I've ever heard. Well, I did hear about the pickles, too. That's pretty great. Okay, well, that is one of the best things I've heard. That's great. I'm stealing that. I'm going to give you full credit. Boy, is that good.
John from the Bronx.
John, if you want to tweet me at Good Appetite, go ahead and tweet me your full name, and I'm giving you full credit. That might go in the Times this year. Butternut squash gravy.
And if you roast it with the with maple syrup,
yeah, you get a little sweetness.
It gives that little sweetness to it, and just do the regular giblet gravy like you normally would, and substitute, you know, one or two cubes of butternut for the flour, and it purees so perfectly that it just, it's the thickest, smoothest gravy you've ever had.
Thank you for
calling.
Thank
you so much for that.
A lot of listeners are sending in recipes. Jessica on Twitter writes that her favorite squash recipe is curried acorn squash soup with coconut milk. She says it's so good.
That sounds so good. I like the coconut.
Is that the best thing you've heard today?
No, the best. Still, the gravy still might be. My mind is still kind of reverberating from that, the gravy thing. But I love the coconut. And again, the coconut is a little bit sweet, as we've been saying. That works so nicely with the squash.
My guest is Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the A Good Appetite column every Wednesday in the dining section of the New York Times. You can also find it at nytimes.com. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Let's go to John from Manhattan. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I was recently in Germany and had what they translated to pumpkin, but it turned out I found it in the market called Hokkaido squash. And it was really quite good, and I look for it here. I see something called blue Hokkaido squash, which is not the same. Do you know if there's something like that here under a different name, maybe?
You know, I have seen it. Was it orange, the Hokkaido in Germany?
Yes.
I've seen the blue
and
one.
About the size of a softball, or maybe a little bit bigger.
Oh, wow. So that's small.
That's small.
I have not seen that. I've seen the blue one, which is quite good. It's I think I've gotten that one at the farmer's market, and it's delicious. But I haven't seen the small orange one. The size of it, so a little bit bigger than a softball?
A little bit bigger than a softball, it has a lot of meat to it. There evidently isn't much cavity to it. It's really quite good.
How would it be prepared? Kind of like acorn squash?
Roasted,
you just roast it?
Yeah, roasted with garlic or whatever, anything to, you know, soften it, make it edible. And it needs work, I think, like most squash do.
Right.
but it was quite good, and it was on the menu almost everywhere. It was so seasonal. This was only about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, a reader in the Times wrote to me last year when I did the squash tests and said that the reader was from Germany, and they said that they, I don't remember if it was a man or woman, said that they, when they're in the States, kabocha is the closest they come in terms of flavor profile. Have you tried kabocha?
No, I haven't, but I'll look for that then.
Thank you for calling.
Sure, thank you.
Danielle from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. Hi, Leonard. My question is about the consistency of raw pumpkin. Like, the one thing without the canned pumpkin is it's always the same. And if your pumpkin is more moist or less, you know, how do you control for that?
That's
in your recipe?
A great question. That's absolutely right. Every type of pumpkin has a different moisture level. The way you prepare it, if you're going to steam it versus roasting it, will give you a different amount of moisture. And the canned product tends to be drier, which is good, because the drier that you have your pumpkin puree, the more cream and eggs and good stuff you can add to it instead of water, which is what you want. You want a nice, rich pie. So what I would do is do the homemade pumpkin however you're going to do it. I think roasting it is a great way because it will dry out some of the moisture, and then you puree it. And then what I like to do is, if it's nice and dry, I'll leave it. If it has the consistency of canned pumpkin, which is really what you want, then you just leave it. But if you find it to be a little bit drippy or wet, I take just a regular colander, or you can take some cheesecloth, a regular sieve, actually, or you can line a colander with cheesecloth. Dump the puree in there and just let it drain for a couple of hours, and it will dry out. And that really helps with the moisture content. So thank you for bringing that up, because I think that's a great tip for people.
Okay, thank you for calling. You know, we have opened up a can of worms in a way here. You know, because I always think of pumpkin as being so totally American. And people have been writing in with kind of an international array.
Fabulous.
Tommy on Twitter, how about savory Afghan pumpkin dumplings?
Yes.
And then, wait, I'm going to read some more. Bunna Cafe tweeted us this. Ethiopia has a pumpkin dish called Dubawat. Cubes are mixed with spicy Barbera sauce with a sweet, spicy, savory milk. Then Tonero in Brooklyn's. Then there's Lauren on Twitter who wants to know about Brazilian recipes with savory squash and seafood curries. She says they're amazing. We go on. Stefano left this clarification on a show page. In Italy, pumpkin and squash are both referred to as zucca, or there's no separate term, just zucchini are called zucchini, which somehow means small pumpkins.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And then somebody else wrote about the Philippines. Melissa in New York said, in the Philippines, we saute butternut squash with garlic, shrimp, ginger, and string beans, and throw in some coconut milk. We also saute it with shrimp paste, string beans, and eggplant. A number of people have suggested coconut milk.
Yeah, again,
that's better than evaporated milk, right?
Much better. And, you know, it's not surprising because, you know, I'm talking about North America, and then I was talking about Europe, but I left out the entire, you know, South American region where it is also indigenous, so it's part of culture.
And then it's become popular in Africa, as we discover. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
You have an Ethiopian restaurant?
Yeah, I guess you got my tweet first before you got my phone call. I have some partner, I have an Ethiopian partner and a bunch of Ethiopian friends, and we started a pop-up restaurant in Brooklyn, and I just happened to run across your show, it's awesome you're talking about pumpkins because, we introduced a seasonal pumpkin dish called Dubawat, and it's an amazing take on the squash and pumpkin because the berbere sauce is a very spicy, earthy flavor. It's a traditional like spice mix of Ethiopia, and when you combine that with the sweetness of the pumpkin or whatever squash you're using, it creates this amazing like dichotomy between like sweet and spicy. And then you eat it, you know, when you in the Ethiopian cuisine, you eat it with the injera, the bread. So the combination of eating the pumpkin with the sourdough and the spiciness is just to die for. It's becoming really, really popular right now.
My stomach is growling. That sounds so good. Where is your pop-up restaurant?
Well, we're based in Bushwick. It's called Buna Cafe. I don't know if I can say that out loud, but anyway.
Well, you just did.
We're a pop-up restaurant. We're based in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and then we do like events all over Brooklyn and all over the city. We do dinner events. But we have a lunch counter in Bushwick right now.
Well, thank you for calling us.
I might have to go check it out very soon because that sounds great. I really like the idea of spicy with pumpkin. I mean, I've done that. I've done sweet and spicy, but I haven't done spicy without the sweet.
And Gia from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a very good family friend who began her relationship with us as our au pair, and she is from Medellin, Colombia. And her favorite American food discovery is spaghetti squash. And she's going to visit me next week, and I would love to give her an innovative new preparation for it. So if you have any suggestions, I would love to hear them.
That's actually really funny because of all the winter squashes, I always have the spaghetti squash sort of specter in the back of my mind because I don't fully love and appreciate spaghetti squash the way I know it is possible. I'm sure I just don't know what to do with it. I have made it. I've roasted it. I've steamed it. I've taken the strands out. I've used them as fake spaghetti with, you know, bolognese sauce, which is another very savory. But I haven't fallen in love with it. So I put it back to you. If you can find one that's an amazing recipe, please tweet Leonard and I. You know, my Twitter handle is at Good Appetite, and I will be so happy to try that.
Great. Or maybe there's another listener out there who has a suggestion.
Anybody
for me,
who has a great spaghetti squash recipe, we really want to know. Please let us know.
We're running out of time. Robert on Twitter asks, is there a government shutdown themed pumpkin dish, a recipe so delicious it will bring Congress together in song?
Oh, I think a pumpkin pie should. I frankly think pumpkin pie is one of the most delicious foods, and we only eat it once a year, and it is a shame. And I would be happy to bake Congress a bunch of pumpkin pies if I thought they could all sit around and make friends and eat pumpkin pie right now before Thanksgiving.
And a lot of other people have written in. Unfortunately, we can't get to their suggestions. They all sound wonderful, and there's such
a
variety
topic,
of things that my audience does with pumpkins already, or other kinds of squash. Melissa Clark will be back on November 22nd to help us set a timeline for Thanksgiving. Before you go, Melissa, I wanted to announce our Twitter recipe challenge. Your mission, my audience's mission anyway, use 140 characters to write an entire recipe. Use the hashtag 140food on your recipe so that we can find it. And then next Thursday at 3 p.m., both of us will be hosting a Twitter chat to talk about our favorite recipe tweets. For details, visit our show page at WNYC.org. And then, are you gearing up for Thanksgiving?
I have to get through Halloween first. There's a lot of Halloween to do before I can even think about Thanksgiving. But yes, Thanksgiving is in the back of my mind, and I have a feeling this is going to be the best year ever.
Well, we have killed two birds with one stone, in a sense, by talking about pumpkins.
Exactly.
Set
the stage for Thanksgiving. And,
well, it's probably for Halloween and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And also Christmas.
Pumpkin pie is traditional in Christmas. That's true. I always forget about that. I sort of put it to bed at Thanksgiving, and I shouldn't because it's great.
Melissa Clark is the James Beard Award-winning food writer who writes the A Good Appetite column every Wednesday in the New York Times dining section, also at nytimes.com. Her latest book is Cook This Now. It's from Hyperion. Thank you for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Alan Salkin talks about the journey of the Food Network from struggling startup to cultural staple over the last 20 years. Later on, documentarian Deborah Coons Garcia and scientists Ignacio Chapela and Michael Hansen talk about the complexity and mystery of soil. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.